Mr. Doherty, Reel 1. Could you tell me first of all, Mr. Doherty, how you came to join the army in the first place?
Well, it was in 1937. I went for the Territorial Army, joined the Territorial Army, the 316 Battery of the Royal Engineers, and they gave me the number of 2048251, and the war started on the 3rd of September, where we were taken to our searchlight camps. I was in the searchlight division, you see. The 316 Royal Engineers, 30th Battalion. We was pretty Boy Scoutish affair in those days. But we retained our officers the same as we did in peacetime. And I proceeded down to Devon. Not Devon, no. West Dean and places around on searchlight sites. That regards the starting of the army.
And then you joined the Royal Artillery later.
That was because, you see, when we was in the, when we were, when war was declared, they made a decree that we take our TAs down at first, because we had brass TAs on our shoulders, and they told us to take those down, and then the powers to be decided that we wouldn't be known as Royal Engineers, we'd be known as Royal Artillery. So instead of the 316 Company, it became the 316, what do they call them? Battery. 316 Battery. So we reversed overnight to the Royal Artillery, you see.
So it was really just a change in name, was it?
They changed us in name. It was, I think it was for the administration purposes or something, but it came from Royal Artillery. We didn't like it. We didn't like it at all. We thought it was a slap in the face.
Why?
Because others, the ones that was conscripted into the army, they got all new uniforms, and we was just ploughing about in mud, in Wellington boots, with only one uniform, putties, as we wore in those days, and we was sort of the forgotten army. We were the volunteers, but we felt that we were being kicked aside, and any second-hand stuff would come to us, and the people being conscripted got the decent equipment. We had the old triangular sound detectors, and the conscripts had the lovely visual indicating equipment. So therefore, we felt like broomstick soldiers in those days. Perhaps I'm wrong, but that was the feeling we had.
Now, in 1941, you found yourself in Singapore. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yes. I was on several camps. I was at Shire Hampton in Bristol. We had a bit of a rough time. We were bunged in to put out the fires and that, because there's a lot of bombing out there, Shire Hampton and Bristol, Avonmouth, and that was a transit camp we were in. Well, it was a bit naughty, a lot of bombs and that, and then they took us to Southend. We didn't know where we were going or anything like that. And they put us on the Largs Bay, took us to Scotland and put us on the Largs Bay. And we finished up in Singapore in November 1941. Yes, 1941, via Cape Town, etc.
Was it an uneventful voyage?
No. It was. We had the Prince of Wales and the Repulse with us. And there's some minesweepers, so I suppose it must have been about 30 ships. Well, one night it was in the Indian Ocean. I was on the machine gun up forward. and the order came round, if anybody fired a shot, one single shot without order, they would be shot. As plain as that. It was a moonlight night, and these Focke-Wulf Condors came over in the moonlight, and all the ships were racing towards the shadow of the clouds. And as Focke-Wulf Condors came into the, you could see them all, came overhead, so the last ship seemed to sink in the shadows of the cloud. So they must have missed us by about 15, 20 seconds at the most. And everybody was there. They must have been the same as myself. Everybody with their fingers on the triggers, if they'd let one shot off, could have possibly given their sight away, and the whole rock would have been attacked. There's quite a large formation of German aircraft up there. That's Focke-Wulf Condors, the big ones. Well, that was the main one. You know, we had submarine scares and all that sort of business, usual caper. But to go out there, we went up round Iceland somewhere to get down to Cape Town, down the coast of America, came across to Cape Town, and from Cape Town we went across to Bombay to Ceylon, Colombo. And went across to Colombo, and we found ourselves in Singapore.
What impression did you have of Singapore at that time?
Well, I thought it was a filthy hole, but, you know, very interesting. But they took us out to Nee Soon. Nee Soon is on the northern part of the island. But we had a few days leave, and we'd walk about in Singapore and have Chinese food and that sort of thing, but it didn't last for long, because suddenly the balloon burst, and Japan cracked down on Pearl Harbor and also up at Ipoh.
Where were you when this happened?
At Singapore Island.
At Nee Soon,
yes. And all the time he was reading the papers about the Japs coming forward, and then they sunk the Renown and Repulse and Prince of Wales. Did I say the Renown before? I don't know. No, the Repulse and the Prince of Wales. Because we said, oh, well, they can't get on the island because the guns are defending us from the sea and the jungles defending us from the north. But everybody seemed to say that Singapore was indestructible. But they seemed to come round the British forces with their boats, from what I can hear of it, because that's not my own knowledge, because I didn't see any of these boats coming round. From what everybody told me, the boats came round behind the lines and then on, you see. Well, the Japs were coming down to Johor, as far as Johor, and the heads, I hope it doesn't get anybody into trouble, but the high up seemed to be in such confusion. We wanted to have a go. We was all in Singapore, and I thought to myself, here's me walking around in me tiddly uniform, that is blue uniform with red stripes down it, all the tiddly bits on it, walking to the Cathay Cinema when the Japs were in Johor Bahru. And the disgusted looks on some of the Chinese faces who was fleeing the peninsula sort of struck me then. Well, what a bloody waste of time.
Did the Chinese seem to resent the fact that we didn't appear to be doing much?
The Chinese were our greatest friends, really. The Malays seemed to think, what the hell are we doing here? But the Chinese were our greatest friends. I think they were frightened of the Japanese coming down. Well, But the Malays were the ones that was more or less two turncoats, if you know what I mean. When the Japs got there, they'd bend and scrape and... how can you be kind to it? The Chinese were very good friends and very good allies, even when we were taken prisoner of war. Perhaps on... I don't know.
And so, can you... Sorry to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Were you going to carry on?
No, carry on, yeah.
Could you tell me what your own personal duties were at Nghe Sung?
Well, we was taken out to the Straits of Johor Bahru. This is, it gives you some idea of the stupidity of the higher ranks. They says, we had rifles then, but they found some searchlights, you see. So he says, well, you go onto the Straits of Johor and you shine your lights across at the Japs, which were just across the river, you see. Well, we thought, well, what the bloody hell good's this? I mean, directly we put the lights on the Japs, I put a bullet in it. It's natural, you know. But the higher-ups couldn't see this. So we all stood there with our searchlights and flashed them across the straits. And no sooner than the searchlights went out and they shot the searchlights out. Naturally, one bullet had smashed the mirror at the back and it's all messed up. And so they kept riddling bullets over and us ducking to get away from the searchlight to duck these bullets. Then they told us to go back. So we fell back and reformed. We reformed on the AMT Law Road at a junction.
Which road?
AMT Law. AMT Law Road. Where we struck our defences across in one line across Singapore. And we made a stand there. We stopped a load of tanks coming down from the north. We stopped those from the north of the island at that junction. There's one bloke I recommend very highly, Ted Hollingsby. He stuck at his tank gun right at the edge of the road and he put these shells into the tanks as fast as they came, put them out of order. All the tanks behind were held up. If one order had been given, advance, which is what we wanted, we could have pushed them off of Singapore. We know that. I think every prisoner of war you've spoken to would be of the same opinion, to tell you that what we wanted the word to go forward, just leadership. Well, Lieutenant Ducharz said to me, grab this stand for the Lewis gun. And a plane came over the top, a jet plane, very low. And Lieutenant Ducharz hit this plane, and it started coming down. And it went down into Mount Rainier ammunition dump and blew the lot up. And Lieutenant Ducharz said to me, for Christ's sake, Doc, say nothing about it. But his plane blew up Mount Rainier ammunition dump. So that was an occasion I remember. The Japs, to fight them, you couldn't see them. They were in the trees. They was around you. We didn't know where they were. They were shooting off these pop guns. The bullets were only little tiny things anyway. They hit you as a... it caused a dent in the air. Can I tell stories? Does
Certainly.
It matter what I say here?
Because, not at all.
Well, it's a humorous part, you see. Titch Holland, a little tiny bloke, was going to the toilet alongside a rubber tree. And a Jap, creased his penis with a bullet. Stop me if I'm saying...
What do you mean, creased? Sort of grazed it?
Got his... top of his penis with a bullet grazed across the top, and so he had to be rushed off to get it bandaged up and everything. It's only a little bloke, about 5'1". Of course, he's running about this with this bandaged up, and pestering Major Glossop, because he was our commander, Major Glossop, for a letter to take home to his wife to say that it was a bullet and nothing else. Which I thought was humorous. Well, we all thought was humorous at that time, because we thought lots of silly things were humorous, but that was the early days of it, anyway, the early days of the war. Anyway, the word came round, a bloke came round on the motor, but apart from the Gurkhas, they were splendid, you know, the Gurkhas.
And what were
trouble is, well, they'd come from nowhere. One time I opened fire and got told off because I thought they were Japs. I got told off. This Gurkha soldier just stood there and looked at me from a distance, you know. My shots couldn't have been so good because I missed him. But I thought he was a Jap. And I was told off because he was a Gurkha. You didn't know who was a Jap and who wasn't, because you'd never seen a Jap, and you see a Chinaman coming round down the road, you think he was a Jap, and it was most confusing. Anyway, the Gurkhas had come up behind you at night. I had one laugh, I scared the life out of me. I felt these hands on my shoulder, but I had a knife on my throat. And when this bloke run his hand over my shoulder, he said, "All right, Johnny," and took his knife away. When I turned round, I saw all his ears. Oh, Christ, it's horrible. It rings of ears on each side of him. His human ears, they were. Looked horrible. All hanging from his belt.
Those were Japanese ears, were they?
I don't know whose ears they were. They couldn't tell him whether they were Japanese ears or what ears they were. They looked a hell of a mess. But anyway, he went off as quiet as he'd come. I never heard him come. He came straight behind me, and I was at the machine gun. I mean, I'd been firing my machine gun at one time, and the bullets had been piling up against my right arm. But, you know, I couldn't feel the... I couldn't feel the pain, and all my arm was burnt all the way up here with machine gun bullets.
Your forearm?
My forearm, yeah. And I didn't feel... I didn't know it. I didn't know anything about it. I can't explain that, but I didn't know there was... But that's just those things. It was a terrifying time. And then they asked me to... The bloke came round the motorbike, as I said, and said, "Well, you've got to pack in. The war's over," and that. And Major Glossop took us to the top of the hill, and we went up there, and he said, "Well, fellas, the war's over." And after a while, we said, "What would we do about it now?" sort of business. War's over. Everybody was cursing. Why can't we go ahead? We've got the men here. But that's only a soldier's point of view. Could be wrong. There's a lot of things behind the scenes we don't understand. And then these little chaps came around this corner. It was real comical. We laughed when we first see them, to think the British Army's running away from this lot.
Why did you find them comical?
Well, their hats perched on the top of their heads. Their trousers, Bombay Bloom, as you could almost call them, they were longer than Bombay Bloom, short trousers, with some putties around, tight putties around them. The putties was not done up properly or anything like that, and they looked a ragged mess. And they looked so minute and small as they came round the corner, and Major Glossop, Lieutenant Dukas, asked for a volunteer to go. Well, Muggins was a volunteer, and I went down with the white flag, and we went down to the bottom of the hill, and the Japs told Major Glossop and Lieutenant Dukas to go up and get the others down. And I stood there, and the Japs was after me wristwatch, and I wouldn't let them at it. I thought they were going to stick a knife in me, but they didn't. And the officer shouted at them, and they stood back. And then the boys started coming down from the hill, and the Japs were absolutely amazed there were so many of them, so many of our people coming down, with their hands in the air, as they was told. And then we were marched to Bukitima.
Sorry, could I interrupt you and ask how you knew that the Japanese were surprised that there were so many?
Well, they all stood... There was about 12 Japanese and an officer. And when they see us coming down, there were gasps at how many there were, even though I couldn't understand the language then, gave me, well, just you just knew that they was amazed that there were so many. They all stood back and raised their guns, as I was expected a whole lot to suddenly have hand grenades or something. When we all lined up at the bottom, according to the Japanese, they seemed ever so friendly, and they started marching us. And they still seemed dwarfs against the outlooks. As a matter of fact, there's a picture in one of the books of us there coming through there. What was that book called? Oh, a book recently written. Oh, I forget it. The railway, the book on the railway, what's it called? Never mind, it's not of importance. We got to Bukit Timah, and there was all put together, Sikhs and Australians, and seemed everybody there, all on this big green there. And then the Sikh officer, who was a white man, lined all the Sikhs up and gave them a talk, I don't know what it was all about. And suddenly all the Sikhs says hi and raised their hands. And that's what that bit will come back later on. Then we marched on to Changi. But one thing that really disgusts me was as we're going through the Cathay cinema and seeing the Chinese heads on the sticks on it. And
what had happened to them?
They'd just been beheaded.
By the Japanese?
Well, I assume so. I don't know. Anybody else had cut their heads off and stick them up there. And but the thing that disgusted me was we was marching and in front of us was some Gordon Highlanders. And the Chinese was lining the roads. I'd gone all trembly, I don't know what for. the Japanese were all lining the roads with baskets of bread rolls, to give to the English troops, and really trying to give them to them. And to see our soldiers, who weren't that hungry, because I mean, we'd eaten 24 hours before at least, smashing into these Chinese, knocking them over and taking the whole basket of bread from them. It disgusted me. I suppose. It made me feel ashamed to be British. Another one was when the Japs were throwing tins of food over at Changi, and when we was prisoner later on, chucking food over, and there's a certain amount of mixtures of races, that's Australian, British, Scotch, you name it, clambering for these little bits of tins of food that was being chucked over the top, and the Japs laughing like hell from up the top. I could have done with one of them, but I couldn't bring myself to go that bloody low. Anyway, then a lot of the blokes was called, or ordered really, to line the route for this general that was coming through Singapore. And the cameras photographed all these soldiers alongside the road to allow the general to go. It's a propaganda lark. Anyway, we were selected from H Block to go out on a working party. That means we had to go round and try and straighten this up. So the Japs wanted to know what trades we were. Well, I was a bricklayer, but I said I was a teacher. A teacher would say he was a bricklayer. A carpenter would say he was something else, a butcher. So everybody got jobs that they didn't know anything about. So she used to get a school teacher building a wall, for instance, but they put us to labour. Then I went into Alexander Hospital, clearing up there. They decided we'd be labourers. So clearing up all the blood and stuff and the mess there. The Because they slaughtered everybody there, you know. I was in cupboards, we was dragging them out of cupboards and rooms. They murdered patients, nurses, doctors, soldiers. They're all buried in the grounds of Queen Alexandra Hospital. I think it's Alexandra Hospital, wasn't it? Yeah, of course it was. And, well, anyway, we had to clean the place up. Then they decided that they'd open a camp called River Valley Camp.
Before you tell me about River Valley Camp, could I just ask you about why it was that the POWs gave false occupations to the Japanese?
Well, it started off by the Japanese asking us what our occupations was, and one officer says, don't tell them the occupations, give them some falsehood. Lieutenant Metcalf says, don't give them your occupations, whatever you do, give them something different. Because I think he knew that they were going to try and use our labour, you see, to make use of us for their war effort. Where was I?
You said River Valley Camp was opened.
Well, River Valley Camp was a lot of attap sheds. And it was a filthy place. But from there, we had to go out on working parties to do our jobs. Now and again, we'd get a drop of a bit of sugar or something and put it in our sleeve of our coat and tie up the sleeve of our shirt and tie up the bottom so we get it past the Japs, you see. Want to hear a humorous one? Yeah, righto. One bloke had a hondoshi. You know what a hondoshi is? It's a piece of cloth that they tie around their waist, and it comes underneath the crutch and up over the string on the front and hangs down square, you see? That's all our clothing. That was my clothing for 3.5 years. And he put the eggs inside the hondoshi to get through the camp guards. Well, when we came to be searched, he lined us all up and shouted, Joski, it means attention, and to number. And of course, this Aussie bloke, he came to attention, but he came to attention slowly, which was understandable. And the Japs decided that we'd do it again, and he came and got us again, and to stand to attention. And he came up and he gave this Aussie a good old clout and told him to come to his attention smartly. So he came to attention smartly, and the yolks of the egg was running down his leg. And when the Jap saw this, he said, I reckon he had dysentery. The Jap says he was sick, and he got off his working party. Well, I thought that was quite rather a humorous one to come in with, you know, because it was those sort of things stick in your head, you know. Anyway, that was River Valley. Then I went sick, with malaria and dysentery and tropical ulcers. And they took me back to Changi. And I was put in the sick bay.
Before we talk more at length about your sicknesses, could you tell me what both Changi and River Valley camps were like? Can you paint a picture of them in words?
Oh, certainly. The long, low huts, about 40 feet in length by about 16 foot wide, with lots of poles. Well, these poles were covered in little knobbly bits. All these bamboo poles that went up in the centre. If you ran your hand up, they were bugs. You got your handfuls of bugs, and you put them in a jam jar, and get a few jam jar fulls, and go over to the Jap quarters and empty all the bugs in outside there, so they got them. But at night, you slept on one communal length, that was bamboo smashed up, making a big platform right through. And you all laid on that long length. Well, at night time, you could feel these bugs on you, and the stench was terrible. You put your hands to your face and all over you they were. Anyway, it's not a pleasant subject to talk about, is it? that was the bug of River Valley. There's bugs at Changi as well, but not so profuse. It was a degrading place, River Valley. Anyway, I came back, as I told you, and I was put amongst all the other sick.